We're thankful, too, that you are here, that you put yourself in the path of the gospel. We're going to do some heavy lifting today, thinking about God's place in our lives, and maybe begin with a few words that are going to be projected for us. God's action, even God's judgment, is not a threat to our faith. It is the silence of God, the deafening silence that brings untold doubt and despair to our journey. The title of this morning's sermon, Where is God? But first, I need your help. Complete the phrase. Like a good neighbor, you're in good hands with
Allstate.
Very good. Insurance is a kind of an interesting concept, is it not? You pay your premiums each month, but unless you're in a car wreck or your house burns down, you don't get anything for your money. The same could be said for your health insurance. You pay your premiums each month on your health insurance, but if you remain healthy, you do not get your money's worth. You see, insurance coverage attempts to make us whole after an accident, an illness, or a disaster. But what does that mean? That means that you need to have an accident or an illness or a disaster before any help comes your way. Now, wouldn't it be great in a perfect world if the insurance would protect us from all sorts of calamity before it ever happened? Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. If only the insurance would surround us with a force field, and cars would just miss us, and germs would be repelled before they ever got to us, and tornadoes would find a new route, and fires could not harm our homes or our loved ones. Now that would be a premium worth paying. Sometimes I think that's exactly what we're looking for from God. We are looking for protection from the slings and arrows of this world. We want God to be a force field to protect us from all danger. But in reality, I have to tell you, God is a lot more like State Farm. The premiums are different, but the coverage is about the same. But as people of faith, we want more. We expect more from God than we do from State Farm. We expect our God to have more power, and we expect God to use that power to protect us from a time of trial. But here's reality. None are spared. We have no insurance to protect us as we journey through a fallen world where fallen people have the capacity to mess up their lives and in turn to mess up our lives as well. Now in Psalm 119, we encounter a person of faith who is deeply troubled. A person of faith who paid the premiums. Listen in. My soul has longed for your salvation. I have put my hope in your word. My eyes have failed from watching for your promise. I have been faithful, and still I suffer. And now I say, when will you comfort me? How much longer must I wait? You can hear the pain in that psalm. God, can you hear me? God, do you care? Why is this happening? Where is God when I'm calling out and I'm in such dire need? 44 years ago, this month, sailors aboard the Edmund Fitzgerald set out from Superior, Wisconsin. The Mighty Fitz, as she was known, was the largest ship on the Great Lakes when she was launched. She was more than 2 football fields long. On November the 9th, 1975, the Fitzgerald was filled with 26,000 long tons of taconite ore. She set out to cross Lake Superior as she had some 500 times before. And the owner of the Fitzgerald? The owner was the Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance Company. On that stormy night, the Mighty Fitz would do battle with a violent lake. The wind gusts were over 80 miles per hour. The waves battering the Fitzgerald were 25 feet tall. That night, men of faith would experience the terrifying fury of nature. The desperation would overtake them, and they'd lift their fists to heaven and ask an eternal question. Where is God? Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? A ship sinks, lives are lost, and the people can't help but wonder, where's God in all of this? The wildfires burn in California, the waters rise in Italy, the cry goes up, where is God? The diagnosis comes back, the cancer has spread, the doctor is polite, the future is bleak. Outwardly brave, inside we crumble and we wonder, where is God? We say our prayers, we live by faith, we trust in God, we paid our premiums. And really, where does it get us? Still, our marriages lose their joy, our days are long and full of burdens, and loneliness is sometimes our closest companion. Where is God in my suffering? From the beginning of time, our ancestors have asked the same questions that we ask today. You may remember the story from the Old Testament, the story of Job. He was blameless and upright. He feared God and he turned away from all evil. He had one wife, 10 kids, financial security, and fine health. In short, life was good, and then it wasn't. In an instant, he lost it all. Thieves came, fires burned, a tornado killed his children. Sores appeared on his body, covering Job from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. And he sat there among the ashes of his life, the ash pile of grief, and he scraped the sores from his body. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? Job called out to God, saying, "Human life is hard. Month after month, I have nothing to live for. Night after night brings me only grief. When I lie down to sleep, the hours drag. I toss and turn all night long, and I yearn for the dawn. My days pass without hope." Quiet? No, I can't be quiet. I did nothing to deserve this. This is not fair. I'm angry and bitter. I have to speak. So Job cried out to God, shaking his fist towards heaven. God then gave Job something to think about. God said, "Who are you, Job, to question my wisdom with your ignorant, empty words? Were you there when I made the world? If you know so much, tell me about it. Who decided how large it would be? Who stretched the measuring line over it? Do you know the answers, Job? Have you ever in all your life commanded the dawn of the day to rise? Have you walked the floor of the ocean? Do you know, Job, where light comes from, or what is the source of darkness? Do you know the answers?" Job did not know the answers. He did not understand all the mysteries of God, but he was intimately acquainted with his own pain and sorrow. He knew what misery was. He had paid the premiums, and still he suffered. And so in anguish, he could not help but wonder, where is God in all of this? Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? Elie Wiesel was still a teenager when his family was taken from their home to a German concentration camp. Wiesel spent much of his youth in study, learning about God, learning about the traditions of the Jewish people, praying and giving thanks. Now he was on a train with his mother and his father and his 3 sisters. The youngest, Zipporah, was only a child. Wiesel writes these words, "We had reached a station. Those who were next to the windows told us its name, Auschwitz. No one had ever heard that before. An SS officer came to meet us. He gave the order, men to the left, women to the right. 8 words spoken quietly, indifferently, without emotion. 8 short, simple words. Yet that was the moment when I parted from my mother. I had not the time to think, but already I felt the pressure of my father's hand. We were alone. For a part of a second, I glimpsed my mother and my sisters moving away to the right. Zipporah held mother's hand. I saw them disappear into the darkness. My mother was stroking my sister's fair hair as though to protect her, while I walked on with my father and the other men. And I did not know that in that place, at that moment, I was parting from my mother and Zipporah forever. And when I'm walking, my father held on to my hand. For Wiesel and his father, the months ahead would drag on and on. Death, starvation, brutality were all around. And finally, the Jews had enough. The Jews of Auschwitz decided to put God on trial. The mock trial took place at night in the darkness of their prison barracks. The evidence was presented. They were God's chosen people, good people, family people, faithful people, and now they were suffering terribly. All hope seemed to be gone. It was not fair. It was not right. And where was God in this? Why was God so quiet? Why did God not wake up from slumber and deliver these poor, suffering people? No, they could not be quiet. They were tired and angry and bitter, and the tears that they cried were the same tears that were cried 3,500 years ago by their ancestors as they made bricks for Pharaoh, living and dying in slavery. The trial was intense and passionate, but the verdict was swift and unanimous. God is guilty, they said. God has forgotten us. And the rabbi then stood up and said, now we have a verdict. Go and say your prayers to God. God was guilty, but in faith, the Jewish people had nowhere else to turn but back to God. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? You see, sometimes in faith, we have nowhere else to turn. There will be times in all of our lives when the clouds of despair will surround us. There'll be times of impatience and uncertainty. And in our physical and our emotional pain, there'll be times when we will look heavenward and join the chorus of 1,000 faithful generations before us saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Where is God in my suffering? They asked that question on Lake Superior 44 years ago. They asked that question in the aftermath of every school shooting, every natural disaster, and in the twisted rubble of 9/11. Job wanted an answer. The exiled people of Israel needed to know, as did the Jews of Auschwitz, and so do we. Where is God in our suffering? Where is God in the midst of the pain that is uniquely ours and at the same time a part of our shared journey? Why does God seem so silent? Why is God so oblivious to my pain? In the 11th chapter of the Gospel of John, we find ourselves standing at graveside with Jesus. The village of Bethany was in grief. The sisters, Martha and Mary, had lost their brother, and Jesus had lost a dear friend. Lazarus was only 30 years old, a young man, a good man, a faithful man, and suddenly dead. Was God silent? The text is very clear. The text tells us that God was not silent. The text tells us that Jesus wept. Jesus wept. Two words which give us great insight into the human journey. Two words which give us a glimpse of the very heart of God. Two words which speak of a shared pain between parent and child, between God and humans. Jesus wept at the loss of a friend. Wept as he was surrounded by the raw grief of a community. Jesus wept. That means God weeping. Why? Why would an all-powerful God weep? Because not everything that happens in this world is according to God's plan. Not everything that happens is God's will. Not everything that happens is the way that God desires it to be. And do you want proof? Jesus wept. Jesus wept because death, especially death out of season, is not God's will. You want proof? Jesus healed the lame and the sick. and in doing so, he loudly proclaimed that sickness and disability are contrary to God's desire. Now, why are you suffering? I don't really know. You may be suffering because in your free will, you made some poor decisions. To smoke, to drink and drive, to cheat on your spouse, to spend when you should have saved, to eat cinnamon roll after cinnamon roll without exercising. Why are you suffering? You may be suffering because your neighbor, in their free will, made self-centered choices that have now caused you pain. They polluted the groundwater, or they play rap music when you're trying to sleep at night. You may be suffering because of the corruption of the government. You may be suffering because your house was built on a floodplain. You may be suffering because you just had bad luck, or you were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Let's be very clear, suffering is sometimes like that. It is random, it's without reason, it's without explanation. But suffering, your suffering or mine, is not the will of God. God is not sending suffering your way as some test to see how much you can take. God has not inflicted you with cancer to teach you the bigger lessons in life. Now, you may learn those lessons as a result of your experience, but please, please do not make God into a monster. A monster who inflicts suffering on his own children. We lock parents up like that. They are deemed to be sick. And yet many have found strange comfort in creating God in that image. So let's find a better image. You want a better image of God? Here it is. Jesus wept. Jesus touched the untouchable, healed the sick. Jesus forgave the trespasses of sinners like me. Jesus washed feet. Jesus took our pain upon himself and died on the cross for us. This is the image of our God. But what about my suffering? Why me? Why me, Lord? And we might answer, why not you? Should you be the first in history to escape the human condition? Should you expect to skate through life unscathed? Should you expect to escape death by leaving on a chariot of fire towards heaven? No, in the mystery of God's creation, there is no heavenly force field to protect us. We live in a world where no one escapes brokenness, betrayal, sorrow, pain, and ultimately death. State Farm cannot protect you. Northwestern Mutual Life could not protect the mighty Fitzgerald. Sorrow, pain, betrayal, and death are just a part of the journey. So what should we do? We should expect it, and we should prepare for it. And how do we prepare for it? Where you're doing it today. You're surrounding yourself with good people. Good people who are going to need your help in their time of trials, and good people who are going to be by your side as you go through the slings and arrows of this world. Does anyone know where the love of God goes and the waves turn the minutes to hours? Where is God in our suffering? Where is God? Right there by our side. Forgiving, touching, washing, weeping, always there. We are never alone. Do we understand it? No. We can only believe it with faith. Faith is believing in something that we cannot see or explain. And so we turn to God in doubt, and we turn to God in faith. We turn to God in joy, we turn to God in sorrow. We join the generations before us in cursing and embracing the mystery. And we end where we began. God's action, even God's judgment, is not a threat to our faith. It is the silence of God, the deafening silence that brings untold doubt and despair to our journey. But listen, God is not silent. God is weeping with you. We may be broken from time to time, but we are not alone, and we're in this together. We're in good company. Amen. I invite you to stand.